Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for stepping out of the constant and never-ending river of insanity just for a few moments and joining us on the Malloy program. I'm not going to comment on last night's Republican show of asininity and craziness. You know, I was just watching Rachel's program the first couple of minutes here, and she made a very salient and excellent and perfect and right on point. First of all, the best-running comedy show of the season is now over. That's a Republican debate thing. But as she pointed out, the most intriguing part of this whole thing, the most intriguing character was the audience. And then she played some clips, audience cheering about Rick Perry's executions, saying, die about people with no insurance, booing a combat veteran in Iraq because he happens to be gay. I mean, she made a very good point. And it's something we talk about on this program all the time. It's easy to understand how crazy people rise to the top and start floating around on the top of the bowl who want to be president. Right-wingers, crazy people. But what is weird to me, always has been, is how they pick up support and how other people... Well, we talked about this all Monday night, and no point getting back into it again. I just find it... so astonishing, so amazing, so intriguing. So these people are not like me-ish. This hour is sponsored by Sanchez. Yeah, him in East L.A. His message, the rent is too damn high. Remember that guy? He was running for what? Mayor of New York City. The rent is too damn high. Thanks, Sanchez. Pow. All right. I just have to share another obituary with you today. I opened the paper this morning, and Barney Rossett has passed at the age of 89, died in Manhattan Tuesday. He was the guy who, as the Times points out, helped change the course of publishing in the United States. He brought writers, playwrights, masters like Samuel Beckett to the attention of Americans with his Grove Press imprint. And he won very important First Amendment fights against censorship. He was the first one to publish Howl, Allen Ginsberg's seminal poem in the 50s. If you haven't read that recently, just Google it. It'll come up. Howl. Incredible, incredible poem. Rossett set up a literary journal called Evergreen Review, and it published writers like Beckett, like Ginsberg. He championed, Beckett did, the beat poets. Everybody from Kerouac to Corso to Ferlinghetti to, of course, Ferlinghetti had City Lights Bookstore, and Ferlinghetti had his own. He did some publishing himself on the West Coast. But he published these people. He published the French Surrealists, the German Expressionists, Dramatists of the Absurd. Besides publishing Beckett, the Times points out, he brought early exposure to European writers like Eugene Ionesco and Jean Genet, and gave intellectual ammunition to the new left by publishing Che Guevara, Ho Chi Minh, and the autobiography of Malcolm X by Alex Haley wrote that, I think. He published Lawrence, D.H. Lawrence's Lady Chatterley's Lover. He published the Tropics books by Henry Miller, Tropic of Capricorn, Tropic of Cancer. He was arrested several times, Barney Rossett was, for publishing this stuff. And, of course, he always won. He always won. And beyond being sued scores of times, he received death threats, and the office of Grove Press was in Greenwich Village was bombed. So, I just wanted to mention this. He was born in Chicago, and oddly, his father owned banks. And even though his dad had conservative views, he sent Barney Rossett to the liberal Francis W. Parker School. And he told the Associated Press 15 years ago, I'm half Jewish and half Irish, and my mother and grandfather spoke Gaelic. From an early age, my feelings made the IRA look pretty conservative. I grew up hating fascism and hating racism. Burroughs' Naked Lunch was published in 1962 by Grove. Story of O by Anne Declo. I mean, it just goes on and on. And so many, he published Waiting for Godot. Beckett's, how many awards has Waiting for Godot received? Of course, Beckett was just one of the Nobel Prize winners in literature published by Grove. But I just wonder how many of us, of a certain generation, I don't know if people... I honestly don't. This is not intended as a slur or a slam or some kind of a patronizing attitude, but I truly do not know any longer if people in their 20s and 30s and teenagers are reading like Tropic of Cancer, Tropic of Capricorn, if they're reading plays anymore. We used to read plays in English class in high school, in public high school. I wonder how many people under the age of 60 who have read the whole poem, Howl. How many people know who Peter Orlovsky was? How many people know Gregory Corso? I mean, just on and on and on. There were people in this country after World War II, immediately after and into the mid-60s, who struggled to overcome. You think there is a surge of this religious crapola now? There was a time in this country, not that long ago, a lot of us were alive then, when you could be jailed for publishing something. Seriously, you could be sent to jail. Of course, that's coming back under the some of these laws signed by George Bush and Barack Obama. But I just wonder if people are aware of what these writers, what these publishers, what these playwrights, these poets were about, and how they broke down this wall of censorship and puritanical ridiculousness that just covered this country like a blanket. So... that's all. I just wanted to mention his passing. Barney Rossett was 89. That's a good age, I guess. He should live to be 99. What are you going to say? All right, we have a break coming, and then we shall... something I want to tell you. There's a... a protest set for noon tomorrow in Los Angeles, near Los Angeles, in Lompoc, California. And you need to know about this. And I'll tell you about that. Tim from L.A. sent this to me. And some other stuff. This Alan West, this Republican from Florida, is pissed off at Obama because it cost Alan West $70 to fill his Hummer up with gas. And our good friend Sheila Samples has got something here. Anyway, it should be a very eclectic and unnerving and disturbing program tonight. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's the end.
you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along.
The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Past the hour. By the way, coming up a little later tonight, I'm going to share with you, among other things, but a testimony by a man named Maxime Daigle. This was a testimony that this guy gave to the Energy Commission in New Brunswick, Canada. I don't know if it was a provincial commission or if it was the federal commission in Canada, but it was a little rough. It was translated from the French to the English to American English, and I found it this morning. I told you I get this newsletter from TVNewsLies.org every morning, a rundown kind of stuff that they've selected that might be of interest, and that's where I found this. And it's testimony from this guy who is a former oil and gas driller. And I want you to hear it, because I know a lot of you have seen Gasland, and you understand a lot of this stuff. That's all the more reason to hear the testimony from this guy in the Maritime Provinces. So stick around for that, okay? Promise? Raise your hand. Let me see. No? How many have I got out there? Okay, that's good. I got this from Tim in L.A. You can find it at tinyurl.com/stopnuketest. tinyurl.com/stopnuketest. Protest of intercontinental ballistic missile test set for noon tomorrow. At the Los Angeles Space and Missile Center, 400 North Douglas, El Segundo. And at 11:55 at Vandenberg Air Base in Lompoc, California, stop the ICBM nuclear-capable missile test from Vandenberg to the Kwajalein Atoll in the Marshall Islands. And Tim writes, the missile will be headed to the atoll in the Marshall Islands, and who knows if it's armed with nukes or not. Well, probably not, Tim. We don't do that anymore. Anyway, that doesn't make any difference, but just to put that at rest. Anyway, Tim writes, we have got to stop it, and Occupy Los Angeles members will be protesting this. Some may even try to enter into the base as a form of civil disobedience, though we don't condone this. So it's being sponsored by United for Peace and Justice, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Interfaith Communities, United for Justice and Peace, LA Catholic Worker, Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, and the Moana Nui Action Alliance. Friday, tomorrow, noon, at the corner of at 400 North Douglas, El Segundo. And at the Los Angeles Air Force Base main gate, 400 North Douglas Street, El Segundo. Why are these tests, or why this demonstration? Here's a quick answer. These tests are in defiance of international law and cost $20 million each. It is unconscionable to be doing this when we have people going without food and shelter here. So if you are in the L.A. area, please be aware of that and attend. Huh? Yes? Can I see a show of hands on that? Not so many. Come on. You've got to do this. You can't just talk the talk. You have to walk the walk, okay? You know, I'm not going to lecture you. You know what you have to do. Representative Alan West, this former Army colonel who was given a chance to retire before the court-martial disaster for the way he was treating prisoners in Iraq, a country that we invaded in violation of international law, in violation of verdicts handed down at the Nuremberg war trials at the end of World War II, in defiance of the Geneva Conventions on the conduct of occupation and war once you have invaded. In violation, in other words, of everything. This pissant, Alan West, was drummed out of the Army because of the way he was treating prisoners. Prisoners that had no business being prisoners being held in a United States military prison. I mean, this is the part that is maddening to people around the world. This is what Americans don't understand. That this goes on constantly and without let up. So this punk Alan West had his ass kicked out of the Army after making all the way, I think he was a lieutenant colonel. Maybe it's a full colonel. I don't know. But he was forced to resign, retire, whatever. He drives a Hummer. And a few hours before Obama was set to speak about energy policy at University of Miami, West went to his Facebook page and posted this little rant. You know, the nerve of this son of a bitch trying to blame Barack Obama. There's a lot of things that Barack Obama can be blamed for. But the price of gasoline, you halfwit, is not one of them. That's because of your buddies in the commodity speculators. What did I hear today on the news? Every time
Huddle up, truth seekers. Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Sorry about that. That's called being run over by a hard break on your radio program. Anyway, where were we? This freak Alan West, who I don't know what his problem is. He's a representative. Obviously, he's a Republican from Florida. I guess he is suffering from some sort of brain damage. He drives a Hummer, and he posted this on his Facebook page right before Obama was to speak about energy policy this morning at University of Miami. He said, quote, "People have asked me before, is there any area where I could praise President Obama? Certainly has an impeccable penchant for understanding the power of the bully pulpit. President Obama is also very adept at promulgating deceptive language, masquerading as policy, actually just insidious political gimmickry." Wow, you sure know how to talk, man. "This so-called tax policy is an example, as well as today's speech on his so-called energy policy shall be. Here's the bottom line. Last night it took $70 to fill a tank of my 2008 H3 Hummer. What's it costing you? What's it cost the president to fill his gas tank?" Jesus God, are you kidding me? You know, a Hummer gets about 15 miles a gallon, which adds, according to this, around $3,600 in fuel costs per year for someone driving 15,000 miles. It also has a 23-gallon tank. The AP reported, quote, "White House advisors believe Obama needs to address the recent spike in gas prices, even though they see it as a cyclical occurrence. Republicans have seized on the issue, citing Obama's decision to reject a permit for a cross-country oil pipeline as evidence of a misguided policy." You sons of bitches, I swear, you right-wingers, I'll just have to say it. I would like to just slap the living hell out of all of you. I really would. I'd like to just punch your lights out. I mean it. I really would. People who say this kind of stuff, these hard right-wingers who have one foot in insanity and the other foot up their ass, I would love to just come to you and beat you down. You know what I'm saying? Man, I get so tired of this. I just, you know, and to be what am I trying to say? I'm just so pissed off right now. To be a spectator to this garbage, there are so many ways to criticize Barack Obama that are legitimate and valid. And these filthy, filthy, hard-right Republicans, and even the phony Mitt Romney, who's no more hard-right than his father was, but he's got to play this game. All of these people, whether they're in politics or scumsuckers like Breitbart or the rest of these, I am so sick of you. I am so sick of your destruction. I wish you all would just go someplace and suck a gas pipe. I am so tired of you. You're destroying my country, you pigs. Now, every time ABC News had this, Mark Greenblatt report tonight. Every time you fill up your car with gas, your dollar ends up in the hands of a wide range of interests from around the world. Some of your money goes to oil companies. Some of what you pay goes to refineries. Some gets divided at the gas station. But what may surprise you is who else you're paying. Speculators on Wall Street. Bart Chilton, the commissioner of the Commodity Future Trading Commission, the federal agency that regulates commodity futures and option trading in the U.S., said it's time to look home when searching for the reasons why gas prices are on the rise. Chilton said, I'm fired up, I'm concerned, and we have to look after consumers. According to Chilton, much of the problem is actually made in the USA, created by Wall Street traders who gamble on oil prices. Chilton told ABC News, these aren't markets without speculation. It's the excessive speculation we're concerned about. He just goes on and on here. By Chilton's calculation, if you drive a car like a Honda Civic, you're paying $7.30 more than you should every time you fill up. And that goes to Wall Street speculators. If your car is a Ford Explorer, you're paying $10 more. For a Ford F-150, you're paying an extra $750 a year that goes into the pockets of these filthy pig sons of bitches on Wall Street, the capitalist commodity gamblers, the casino owners who keep doing this to us. No matter where you turn around, any commodity. Right now it's gasoline. Next it's going to be baby food or something. Mortgage banking, house prices. Well, when the revolution comes, and you will bet your ass it's going to come eventually, I know what side of the barricades I'll be on. I hope you're going to be there, too. This hour is sponsored by Sanchez in East L.A., who says the rent is too damn high. Filthy right-wing pigs. God! Oh! What is your game? What are you trying to do? Okay. Our friend Sheila Samples at Op-Ed News sent me a story here from The Guardian of the UK about Afghan refugees, you know, Afghanistan, right? Where we have invaded and are occupying and continue to destroy and kill and demolish, where we have torture facilities, where detainees, after our initial invasion, were put in packing containers, the kind you see going by you on the railroad crossing with all those goods from China. Detainees, people, goat herders, taxi drivers that were rounded up by the so-called Northern Alliance and ransomed off to American military personnel and told, yeah, these are the Taliban's here. And they were put in these packing containers and were cooked alive in the desert, in the heat, in a metal container and left there. I mean, the list of atrocities that have occurred in Iraq and Afghanistan by the United States CIA and the United States military is yet another chapter in the war crimes that we commit, this country commits on an hourly basis somewhere on this tired, ready-to-collapse planet. Are you aware of that? the torture, the humiliation that went on in Iraq, the blowing people away, the bombing and executing of civilians and children, what's going on in Afghanistan, it just doesn't stop, does it? So now it's the refugees, internal refugees. How many internal refugees did the coalition forces cause in Iraq? What do the human rights organizations say? 1 million? 2 million? Or are those people who fled their own country? About 500,000 Afghans, according to this, according to Amnesty International, are living in desperate conditions with no help from the puppet government of Hamid Karzai. None. About 400 people a day, it says here, are being driven to the cities by security worries. According to a report entitled Fleeing War, Finding Misery, these refugees who now stay within Afghanistan's borders but struggle to survive in slum-like camps with little or no access to water or food, shelter, health care, please, education, get out of town. The report cites a man who 3 years ago abandoned his home. He said, "We left because of war and the bombardment from American planes." He says that the settlement houses about 1,000 families. The settlement, where is it? It's the Chahari Kambar camp in Kabul. 1,000 families, and they share 4 hand pumps for water. Now, the government of Hamid Karzai, this filthy, traitorous to his own people, this graft, corruption, riddled bastard, Hamid Karzai, ignores them and stops aid groups from making improvements to conditions in the camps on the grounds that it encourages migrants to settle permanently away from their homes. You can't take care of the refugees that you caused because it'll make more refugees come looking for a handout. Doesn't this sound like American politics? Doesn't this sound like these right-wing devils in this country that are running for president? Well, you can't give people food stamps because everybody wants food stamps. Well, you can't help women and infants and children because then all women and infants and children will want some free food. Doesn't it sound exactly the same? Hamid Karzai is a total pig. He's a former lobbyist for Unocal Oil in California. And we installed him as president. And he ignores his own people, the people that we drive into refugee camps with our bombs and our napalm and our white phosphorus and our murder rage.
You're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So the government, the puppet government. Oh, by the way, this hour has been sponsored by Sanchez. Bless his heart. In East L.A., you know who he is. And his message tonight, the rent is too damn high. Thanks, Sanchez. You ought to calm down a little bit, pal. I mean, you know, you get all upset like this. Worries me a little bit, right? Hamid Karzai, who is a puppet of the United States and is just wallowing in graft and corruption, he and his whole goddamn family, they're just stealing everything they can get their hands on and their feet on and their teeth around. I mean, just a rapacious bunch, as these occupied countries' leaders usually are. Look at the Vichy French. I mean, look at any country that is occupied, invaded and occupied by a foreign military. And when they install one of the locals to run the government, he is always corrupt down to his goddamn breath. Hamid Karzai is exactly that. So his government is stopping aid groups from making improvements to conditions in these camps on the grounds that it encourages migrants to settle permanently away from their homes. If they stay in their homes, eventually we bomb them. And as the Guardian of the UK reported, in a country already suffering from chronic unemployment, the largely uneducated and unskilled refugee mass struggle to find work, to feed and warm their families. Amnesty's Afghanistan researcher said, quote, thousands of people are finding themselves living in freezing, cramped conditions and on the brink of starvation, while the Afghan government is not only looking the other way, but even preventing help from reaching them. Local officials restrict aid efforts because they want to pretend that these people are going to go away. This is a largely hidden but horrific humanitarian and human rights crisis. End quote. Why isn't the government of Afghanistan taken out behind the wall and shot? Why not? The only reason? Because they serve the purposes of the, coalition forces. The future of children living in the camps, the report goes on, is also being compromised. They don't attend schools. Often the reason given for not attending schools is that they don't have national identity cards, which they can only get in the home districts they have fled in fear because of the war that we wage against the crazy people, the mullahs and the Taliban and the rest of these goddamn freaks. Oh, yeah, they're crazy, and we're the warmongers. Nice combination. Nice way to get the civilian population caught between that kind of a mess, right? Amnesty gave a copy of the report to the Karzai government, and there was no response. And why should there be? Bah! Now, regarding gasoline prices, Prairie 2 sent me a quick email here. The Republicans had complete control from 1994 until, well, they still hold sway. New oil production takes about 10 years to bring online. Where's all the oil the Republicans, quote, created, end quote, in the 90s? Most of the oil leases granted in the 90s were never exploited. That's where the Republican oil is. On the other hand, there's a huge surplus in this country of gasoline. There always has been. So why do more drilling? You don't need more than you can use, you morons. He's referring to the Republicans. But, see, once again, I mean, this should be common knowledge. Every American should understand this, and none do. Except us, around our little campfire. The price of gasoline has nothing to do with supply and demand, and everything to do with the gamblers and the speculators and the money changers and the bastards who are doing it to us every single time we turn around. The capitalist pigs who manipulate everything. Everything. Well, they're not going to get one past Prairie 2. Right? Or you or me. Of course, we still pay. Of course, I use my Kroger card. So I get a dime off a gallon. Jesus. I don't know. I get too pissed off. Religious murder. It's not just the Christians. Yousef Nadarkhani, an Iranian Christian pastor, in 2010 was found guilty of apostasy and sentenced to death for refusing to recant Christianity. Just like the Christians used to sentence the Muslims to death for refusing to recant Islam during the Inquisition. You notice how this works? A final execution order, according to the American Center for Law and Justice, has been issued for this man. Neither Human Rights Watch nor Amnesty could verify the information for the Huffington Post, but the White House this afternoon issued a statement condemning the reports and calling on Iran to release him. The White House statement read, quote, "This action is yet another shocking breach of Iran's international obligations, its own constitution, and stated religious values. The United States stands in solidarity with Pastor Nadarkhani, his family, and all those who seek to practice their religion without fear of persecution, a fundamental and universal human right," end quote. Now, the death sentence was given to him because he refused to recant his conversion to Christianity. And the Christians murdered the Muslims. The Muslims murdered the Christians. The Jews attacked the Palestinians. The Palestinians respond by throwing stones. The Hindus attack the Muslims in India, and the Muslims respond by burning down the temples. So the Hindus respond by butchering the Muslims and burning down the mosques. Ah, religion. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
At Quicken Loan.
Seven past the hour. This hour is sponsored by WomenStanding.org, a peace group in Seattle. The message is to Margot Pays, the woman who is at InsideOutNews.org, who in about an hour, I think, begins her new webcast at insightoutnews.org. The message from womenstanding.org is, standing with you, Margot, on your venture into revealing the truth. As you must know, the times we are living in do not favor truth seekers. But with the support of Mike Malloy, you do stand a chance. Be strong, sister. Peace. Signed, Women Standing. Well, okay, although I think Margot will probably do real well with a lot of support. Just check her out. InsightOutNews.org. Where are we? Prairie 2, I think. You want to do that? Okay. Bruce Enberg, our economic affairs correspondent, writing under the nom de plume Prairie2.com. He writes, initial jobless claims held steady this week, suggesting that the economy continues to produce jobs despite denials of any recovery from the Republicans. They suddenly seem to be showing empathy for the long-term unemployed, not today's right-wing talking point on why Obama's plan to reform corporate taxes by closing loopholes won't work is a really good one, okay? The reason it won't work, according to the Republicans, to close the loopholes that allow Republican benefactors to pay no taxes is that it makes the tax code too complicated. Yes, eliminating tens of thousands of pages of tax regulations dedicated to creating loopholes, loopholes designed to benefit specific companies, will complicate the tax code, you sons of bitches. Oh. Pray to continues. There are a significant number of large corporations that spend more on lobbying than they pay in taxes. You might wonder how they can spend that much money to wine and dine a relative few members of Congress, even at $400 a bottle. The truth is that most of the money goes to maintain the revolving door to the Capitol. Former senators, members of Congress, and senior congressional staffers are guaranteed a high-paid job with lobbying firms once they leave public service. That is, if our representative made sure their corporate constituency was well taken care of. A well-placed member of Congress who has the dirt on the other members can be paid millions for his knowledge of, well, history, like Newt, maybe? Staffers can do okay at the money hog trough as well if they know how to properly craft legislation and they know where the dead hookers are buried. They will be rotated in and out of the House and Senate office buildings by their corporate masters as needed to protect corporate interests. Former staffers will actually write more legislation when not working at the Capitol than when they worked there, as those tens of thousands of pages of loopholes don't just fall from the sky. Even senior military officers that worked in procurement can find a seven-figure job upon retirement as easily as picking out a new set of golf clubs. Gold-plated, please. There are a lot of people on the right and the left who constantly obsess over term limits as the answer to all our problems, as if making sure members of Congress know nothing about how government works would somehow give us better government. For one thing, the average member of Congress spends half of his or her day raising money to get reelected instead of doing his or her job. Public financing would fix that. But we still need to close the revolving door. Some tough ethics laws would do the trick, but you would need to start with the Supreme Court, or any reform will simply be struck down as a violation of corporate civil rights. This might seem like an insurmountable goal, but there's one advantage that we have. These people are motivated strictly by greed and are terrified of getting caught, because every one of them has committed multiple felonies. Enough public clamor will force them to allow reforms, as they hope to retire quietly in order to spend their ill-gotten gains. The trick is to maintain the clamor long enough to make it happen, and then to not forget about it when it's done. The progressives, capital P, historically speaking, the progressives push through their reforms without the internet, without video recording, without radio, without long-distance telephone service. They couldn't self-publish. Flyers had to be set in lead type and printed in bulk. Those people would see the advantages we have today as nothing short of magic. The old progressives, capital P. Of course, the forces of darkness have these things too, and they spend billions to make sure everybody sees their lies. But you'll notice their sway is starting to wane. They don't have any new talking points, and they have resorted to using the so-called debates over contraception as if it were 1955. Santorum is reduced to reading from yellow to John Birch Society flyers. Did you know that 5% of deaths in the Netherlands are from forced euthanasia? The Dutch people are rather surprised by this, but the Santorums and the far right have known about it since the 50s. When it seems it's nothing but an impossible goal about this stuff, take this little quiz. How many Western democracies have ever elected a person of color to their highest office? The majority of Americans are better and smarter people than they are generally given credit for being. Prairie2.com. Ooh, he's got a tagline on here. Tomorrow, learn how much tax you pay to your Republican overlords when you go to the gas pump. It will surprise you. Ooh, Bruce is now adding teasers to his essays. Well, that's I love it. No, don't worry, Bruce. I love it. I think it's great. Okay. Oy. Oh, yeah, the other night we told you about this Republican freak, William Batchelder, his comment about sending Obama to jail. And he's not going to apologize. It's amusing. This is from Steve in Laverne, California. It's amusing, he writes, considering that if someone like Batchelder had said that about W back in the day, not only would he have been told to apologize, which he would have immediately, but there would have been screams for his resignation as well. Don't you just love the double standard that exists? I can only imagine when we get to the general election, Obama will be portrayed as a Satan-worshipping agent of Islam. Oh, wait. He already is. Steve in Laverne, California. And from Alma, Mike, the other thing Obama has done is the absolute strong-arm tactics on the state legalized medical cannabis. WTF? This is crazy-making. Worse than the Bush era. A lot of these dispensaries are legitimate. Why is this going on? I'm not a user of medical marijuana, but it just seems like such reversal and so hypocritical. I want to vote for a Green Party or someone who is not one of the other of these corporate sellouts. Elma.
Misinformation followers like a plague. Nobody knew from time to time if the plans were changed. Oh, 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 if the plans were changed. You can beat us with wires. You can beat us with chains. Natural rules, but you know you can't outrun a history train. I've seen a glorious day.
Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Jessica Valente is the founder and editor of the popular blog and online community Feministing.com. Jessica Valente, she had this piece at The Nation Online today. It's about the long Republicans' long war against women and sex. And as she points out, aspirins and short skirts and contraception, oh my, the last few weeks have seen a slew of Republican gaffes concerning women's sexuality. From Rick Santorum's billionaire supporter Foster Freese waxing nostalgic about the good old days when women put aspirin between their knees in lieu of contraception. On and on and on. Republicans' fear of sex, of women's sexuality in particular, has become a major media talking point and a source of outrage among American women. But Jessica writes, what I don't understand is why anyone is surprised. Republicans have long based their agenda for women in a deep-rooted disdain for all things female. We've been down this road many, many times before. Dahlia Lithwick reported last week in Slate on a law that's poised to pass in Virginia that would make it legal to penetrate abortion-seeking women against their wills. A procedure that would count as rape under state law. Thank God that has now been modified, although Jessica obviously wrote this before it was modified and before it was modified into something damn near as oppressive and invasive. Okay, girls, you don't need the wand in your vagina, but we're going to take this here tummy thing and rub stuff on you and put this on you and, you know, you don't like it? Too bad. The focus on birth control is not new either. Conservatives and Republican appointees successfully held up emergency contraception for over-the-counter status for 3 years in the FDA, despite a recommendation from an independent joint advisory committee to the agency to make the drug available. It also came out that in an internal memo, FDA medical official Janet Woodcock argued against making the contraception available over-the-counter for fear that it would cause extreme promiscuous behavior, such as the medication taking on an urban legend status that would lead adolescents to form sex-based cults centered around the use of Plan B. A woman who is the medical official to the Food and Drug Administration says that the morning after pill, if it's available over the counter, it will cause extreme promiscuous behavior and will lead adolescents to form sex-based cults. Jesus God. Jessica goes on, but let's not fool ourselves into thinking that this is just a problem of men attacking women's rights. Conservative women's rights groups, always eager for a patriarchal pat on the head, good dog, have long thrown other women under the bus, under the guise of protecting them from their own wanton sexuality. The Independent Women's Forum, who oppose the Violence Against Women Act, and who don't believe pay inequity even exists, started a campaign years ago to get the award-winning play The Vagina Monologues banned from college campuses, arguing that it's pornographic and reduces women to their body parts. Specifically, the one body part they'd rather not think about, apparently. The Clara Booth Luce Policy Institute, another right-wing women's organization, launched a campaign and contest in 2008 to bring back the dowry and hope chest. The winner received a, quote, cedar-lined hope chest filled with $1,000 worth of dowry items, as well as $500 towards her future wedding. If you think the GOP is launching a war on women, the truth is they never stopped. And see, this is another one of those things that just, I've got women in my family. You know, I'm married to one. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I have a few daughters. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, you know, I'm, right? So I probably shouldn't admit this, but my mother was one. Yeah, she was a woman. So because of this, maybe I'm just bigoted and prejudiced about all this. That could be it. We'll be right back.
And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play. Starched white shirt, you will find bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around with.
This guy's hanging on the
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by womenstanding.org, and it's being sponsored by them in solidarity with Margot Pays at insightoutnews.org. Women Standing puts it this way: standing with you, Margot, on your venture into revealing the truth. As you must know, the times we are living in does not favor truth seekers. But with strong support, you do stand a chance. Be strong, sister. Peace. Women Standing. So there you go, Margot. We're going to open the phone lines. 877. What? Yeah. 877-996-2556. From Alternet, I didn't even know this, but there's a bill working its way through the Georgia collection of right-wing sons of bitches who cluster under what is referred to here as the Gold Dome. That's the dome of the state capitol. It is pounded, flattened out gold. Oh, it just gleams in the sunlight. Makes your heart go pity-pat. The growing trend of legislators in southern states that already have low union density and so-called right to work for less laws on the books is now proposing harsher anti-union laws, and it spread to Georgia. In a move that could impact non-labor groups engaged in direct action, picketing, or protest, Georgia Senate Bill 469 includes felony penalties for, quote, criminal trespass, end quote, and unbelievably this, quote, conspiracy to commit criminal trespass. What the hell is that? The punishment being a $10,000 fine or a year in jail or both. That this is specifically included in a bill that cracks down on organizations' right to picket outside a workplace or company seem to indicate that a union or other group engaged in picketing could be charged with a crime for the activity of one member who crosses the line. Conspiracy to commit criminal trespass. This is one of the things it says. Listen to this. It shall be unlawful for any person to engage in mass picketing at or near any place, including private residences, where a labor dispute exists in such number or manner as to obstruct or interfere with or constitute a threat to obstruct or interfere with the entrance to or egress from any place of employment or the free and uninterrupted use of public roads, streets, highways, railroads, airports, or other ways of travel, transportation, or conveyance. And a partridge in a pear tree, huh? What's that mean? Constitute a threat to obstruct or interfere with. As Alternet points out, that could be interpreted pretty broadly and leaves a lot of discretion up to the police on the scene or to business owners who could have picketers removed by claiming they presented a threat. But that's not all. Here's more of the bill. A person or organization that he or she is affiliated with or acting on behalf of commits an offense when he or she engages in targeted picketing of a private residence that has or intends the effect of interfering with the resident's right to quiet enjoyment. WTF? Quiet enjoyment. Or when such targeted picketing has or intends the effect of violence or intimidation. So quiet enjoyment trumps the First Amendment? Now, these provisions target, in addition to labor unions, of course, movements like Occupy that have engaged in actions both at businesses and at private residences. And along with the attacks on unions and other protest groups' right to peacefully assemble, the bill also includes a slew of provisions to make it clear that the already right to work for less state isn't going to make it easy for workers to join unions. The so-called right to work already makes sure that workers don't have to even pay their share of the cost of representation, despite requiring the union to bargain for all employees in a union shop. This new bill would reiterate this and require private employers to post notices in the workplace reminding workers that they have the right not to join a union. In other words, it mandates anti-union information being posted in the workplace, but not pro-union. God damn, I want the freedom. I want my freedom back. I want the freedom to use the N-word. I want the freedom to beat women. I want the freedom to work for less low wages. I want the freedom not to have to go picket. Oh. Incredible. Jeff is in Montgomery, Alabama.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Jeff. How are you?
Good. Hey, I found a little dirt on Pat Robertson.
A little dirt? Oh, please. The man is filthy. Always has been. He's a murderer for a kind of Christ that you wouldn't allow in your house. What have you found, Jeff?
Well, this is pretty interesting. This is about his military service, so-called. Believe it or not.
Yeah, but most of us know about that.
What about his senator dad?
Yeah, his dad was a senator, and Pat Robertson was on his way to Korea to fight, and his dad got him transferred to Japan, where he sat out the war. That's not really news, Jeff.
Oh, do you know where it's from, believe it or not?
Well, originally it was just all over the place, 20, 30, 40 years ago. Jeff!
Well, there's a specific book by a former Republican representative and some Marine officer. He was also a Marine officer who served around the same time as Pat Robertson. It's called The Taking of Hills 610 and Other Essays on Friendship, and the chapter is chapter 12, The Liquor Officer.
Yeah, no, that's right. His job was to provide booze for the R&R people who were in Japan. Yeah, well, Jeff, I'm not trying to be a smartass or anything, but that's not really, I haven't heard of that book, but, you know, I think most people understood who care about this kind of stuff. Thanks, Jeff. Most people understood that Robertson, not only was Robertson a draft-dodging, a sneaky son of a bitch, but he used his senator father to get him out of it. And he's a hypocrite, and he's a liar, and he's filth. Pat Robertson is filth. He just defines the word filth. And yet he will sit on his little crappy-ass television program and tell you that you are going to burn forever in this vicious, rat-infested hell that the Christians believe in, if you don't accept his version of the Christian Messiah. It's astonishing. Just astonishing. It's just like Franklin Graham. You know, goddamn cokehead, alcoholic, woman-chasing freak. Not that there's anything wrong with any of that. If you want to use coke and drive yourself crazy, go ahead. But don't stop and you know, at some point, oh, well, you know, I've been saved now. I've been saved, and I'm going to condemn everybody and everything. I'm going to condemn the president. I'm going to condemn the Muslims. I'm going to condemn everything I can think of, including my bitch of a sister who I hate. I hate my sister. And my earthly father, made it almost impossible for me to grow up. If your father is Reverend Billy Graham, what are you going to do to top that? I tried everything. I did. I tried it all. And now I'm to the point where I talk about Muslims as being devils and demons. And, of course, I know I can't travel any place because if I go somewhere, they're going to catch me and cut my head off. And I'm just not. Oh, my God. Franklin Graham, he is so easy to do. He really is. He's so easy. Ugh. Carl's in Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, Carl.
Wow, Mike. You know what? It's good that it's the start of spring training because you just threw a slow ball down the middle of the plate, and I'm Hank Aaron, and I'm going to knock it out of the park.
All right, go ahead.
Two things that I took from last night's debate.
Yeah.
First of all, they mentioned he who shall not be mentioned, George W. Bush.
Right.
That was shocking enough.
Somebody mentioned him?
Mentioned him twice.
Oh, my God.
Mentioned her twice. Yeah, that's what I said. And then two, my mother's side of the family, all originally from New Orleans, so I'm very familiar with Mardi Gras and Lent.
Right.
And the two Catholics up there didn't have the ash on their head. They supposed to be holier than thou, but they didn't have the ash mark.
Oh,
and then
my God.
It dawned on me. Wait a minute. Now, this is where I'm going to hit out of the park.
Okay.
Wait a minute. These hypocrites up here, two of them are Catholic, one of them is a Mormon, and one of these guys are going to be the nomination president in the Republican Party.
Right.
But see, the Republican Party has been stoking xenophobia and racism for about the past 40, 50 years, and you got guys like Graham and Robinson and those guys that evangelicals who think that Catholics and Mormons is a cult.
Right.
And the irony was so sweet, I got a cavity last night when I thought about it, that they have to vote for either a Catholic, or a Mormon. And I'm going to tell you, these evangelicals in the South, they're going to sit out. They're going to sit out and being racist and xenophobia, been soaking this garbage for the past 40 years to get the middle-aged white man vote. It's going to bite them in the ass.
I can't.
It's going to bite them deep.
Carl, I can't wait. I can't wait to see it. I want to see the teeth marks. I want to see the blood droplets. I want to see it off. Carl, thank you. Before the hour, once again, this hour has been sponsored by WomenStanding.org, a peace organization based in Seattle. The message goes to Margot Pays, who is with InsideOutNews.org, and who has an online radio program that has been expanded to an hour. WomenStanding.org writes, "Standing with you, Margot, on your venture into revealing the truth. As you must know, the times we are living in does not favor truth seekers. But with support, you do stand a chance. Be strong, sister. Peace." Women Standing. I'm just trying to process what Carl said. The irony was so sweet, I got a cavity. I got to remember that. The irony was so sweet, I got a cavity. It's kind of like Ron Paul the other night. I saw this on Lawrence O'Donnell's program. Ron Paul, the great libertarian. You people that swear by Ron Paul, you think he's a libertarian. You must have had your eyeballs rattled last night when he, because he's seeking a Republican nomination, he throws his libertarianism right down the toilet with the rest of these thugs where it concerns a woman's right to privacy. And then Ron Paul said something that to me is just astonishing. You know, all these right wingers feel that the pill caused all sorts of promiscuity and it unleashed the fury of the vagina. And that's when they all went nuts, you know. All the white Republican males, the right wingers. Oh no! The fury of the vagina unleashed with the pill. And Ron Paul sits there and says, "No, you got it just backwards." He says, "It wasn't the pill that caused immorality. It was immorality that brought about a desire for the pill." And when I heard that, I didn't watch that garbage last night, but I heard that on Lawrence O'Donnell's program on MSNBC. Like O'Donnell, my chin dropped down to my chest. What? this guy is an OBGYN, Ron Paul, and he is saying that the pill, or no, what, immorality in society brought about the development of the birth control pill. To you people who are still rooting for this gnarled-looking little bastard Ron Paul because you think he's a libertarian, wake up and smell the incense, will you? This guy is a goddamn phony just like Mitt Romney. He's a psychopath just like Santorum, and he's out of his skull just like Newt. Look at these four, the four horsemen. Look at them. This is what the Republican Party has farted up on the stage to be president? These four? Oh, my God! Bring it on! You know, I'm sure the Obama camp is sitting around going, oh, my God, do we have 4 years or more or what? Bring it on! Can you imagine any one of these clowns trying to unseat Barack Obama? This is nothing but an exercise in some kind of weird, perverted self-pleasuring going on among the right-wing Republican Party base in this country. They fart up these candidates up on the stage. Remember the original eight? Oh, my God! Remember them? And now it's down to this? These are the four? My, I've had Republicans in my family, but they were real Republicans. In other words, they were tolerated. You know, one was a naval officer. Another one was an Italian immigrant. And they were Republicans of I don't know, local Republicans. I don't know. They weren't insane. And I just wonder, what are Republicans doing tonight? I mean, if you're a typical Caucasian Republican, which 95% of you are, and you're not completely crazy like your four candidates are, what do you do when you watch these people? What do you do? I mean, when you watch this, not just this collection of protoplasma floating on the stage, encapsulated in these four clowns, but what do you do about the audience who sits there and cheers people dying because they don't have health insurance, or boos somebody over there fighting for your life who happens to be gay? What do you do? The irony was so sweet, I got a cavity. Thanks, Carl. I'm going to remember that one. All right, we have a break, and we'll be back. And maybe you will, too. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. You're listening to the Malloy program. Okay, as promised, Maxime Daigle, I'm not very good at pronouncing French into English, but that is his name. He is a, I'll let him explain what he is in his own words, but this is about hydraulic fracking. This was at a hearing to the Energy Commission in New Brunswick in the Maritime Provinces in Canada. And I just want to share this with you. This is what this man said at a, I think it was provincial government. I don't think it was the federal government in Canada. I think it was the provincial government in New Brunswick. Perhaps not. Perhaps it was the National Energy Commission in that country. Anyway, this is what Mr. Daigle said. As Albert Einstein said, quote, insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, end quote. For what needs to be said here, 10 minutes is not enough, so today I will stick to only one main energy resource that we need to not go toward. My name is Maxime Daigle, and I am from Pointe Sabine, New Brunswick. I'm a student in electrical engineering technology, alternate energy systems, and also a former oil and gas driller. I've worked on the oil rigs for a number of years in Alberta, British Columbia, Saskatchewan, Louisiana, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and New Brunswick. Most people have heard about the Sable Island Project, but geologists with steady analysis have come out and said that the big shale gas deposits off Sable Island is also inland in the Maritimes, and that it is way larger than it is out in the open waters. So today I come here to speak about my concerns about shale gas exploration. As a citizen of New Brunswick, Canada, and planet Earth, I really do believe that our basic human rights are violated by these oil and gas companies and governments that support such activity. From working in the oil and gas industry for 7 years, I've had the opportunity to see how a well is drilled and what methods and chemicals are used in the process. I tell you today, this is not a safe practice for our ecosystem or for our health and future. The ways of extracting oil and gas from a well bore is done by hydraulic fracking. Hydraulic fracturing is the high-pressure injection of fracking fluid, a mixture of water, sand, and toxic chemicals, into the ground to break open and fracture rock formations to release liquid gas. The controversial technique was developed in the 1940s by energy service company Halliburton. Modern practices such as horizontal fracturing and high-volume hydraulic fracturing allow drillers to extract greater amounts of gas than previously possible. But at what cost? The chemicals used in hydraulic fracturing often include substances that are toxic to humans and wildlife. While particular fracking fluid chemical combinations differ based on the company and drilling location, many include toxic substances such as benzene, ethyl benzene, glycol ethers, and acids, to name a few. Many of these chemicals contain arsenic, boron, chromium, and many more. Fracking fluids may contain mixtures of hundreds of chemical agents. Yet the precise chemical compositions used are secret. Drilling companies refuse to disclose the composition of their fracturing fluids, citing proprietary interests. The amount of these chemicals used can reach upwards to 50,000 gallons during the fracturing of a single well. The infiltration potential of these fracking fluid chemicals into drinking water supplies is alarming. Even though the hydraulic fracking process is designated or designed to remove these chemicals, a large percentage, anywhere from 25 to 80%, are often left in the ground and never fully recovered. As well, hydraulic fracturing's potential impact on both water usage and quantity can be significant. A single fracture of one well may require anywhere from 1 to 5 million gallons of water. To compare, a single fracture using 1 million gallons of water would roughly be equivalent to 2 Olympic-sized swimming pools. This also translates into as many as 200 truckloads of water per fracture of a well. Many wells require multiple fractures, some up to 18 times. Where is this water to come from? With fracking comes the enormous threat of contamination of residential wells, groundwater aquifers, and nearby surface water sources such as rivers and streams. From Virginia to Wyoming in the U.S., hundreds of documented cases have surfaced regarding water quality and quantity problems in residential wells located near natural gas drilling operations. These reports include incidents of water wells being contaminated during and directly following hydraulic fracturing operations. Gases such as methane and hydrogen sulfide have been reported in drinking water, along with murkiness and discoloration of the water. These corporations and government supporters realize that we have an addiction to fossil fuels and consumerism. They say that hydraulic fracking is safe and well-controlled. Opponents, such as I, say that hydraulic fracking is not safe to our water supplies. Most are confused and don't have the education to make an educated choice on the matter, meanwhile. And they know that the regulations to the fracking process will not be enforced. Nova Scotia has banned hydraulic fracking, and Quebec has put a halt on further fracking. Why is it that people in Colorado, Pennsylvania, and Arkansas and other states have proven that their water wells are contaminated, and these oil and gas companies are saying it's not contaminated because of their explorations? Why would we believe oil and gas companies and not believe families living in those situations? If you want to watch a good documentary on what shale gas exploration does, go rent or Google for the documentary named Gasland. And then ask yourself, what if this pollutes your water supply? And what would that would mean to you, your neighbor, your kids, and grandkids? Is it worth risking our health? So if you believe that this possibly could be true, stand up to these guys and say no to shale gas exploration. Plastics, wax, insecticides, pesticides, and ammonia or fertilizer used for mass food production comes from oil and shale gas. For every calorie of food produced, it demands 10 calories of hydrocarbons to produce. A barrel of oil pulled out of a rock for $1 is the equivalent to 25,000 man-hours. How can you replace that barrel of oil to fit in our way of life? We had a good opportunity to make the transition to renewable energy during the oil embargo of 1973. But when we were offered a cheaper way to continue our way of life by OPEC, we canceled all renewable energy projects. Are we going to do so again? And the peak oil is not U.S. peak oil. This is world peak oil, upon or past us. Let me pause here for a second. We have a break coming. Now, the reason for the kind of jerky recitation of this is because this was this testimony was conducted in French, and it was translated by the Moncton, New Brunswick newspaper. And this was at tvnewslies.org in their morning rundown this morning. This is where I got it. So if you want this article, and I mean, why not? Go to tvnewslies.org and you'll find it. Concerns about shale gas exploration. And again, the recitation here is a little jerky on my part. I apologize because it comes from French to English to American English. Ick. We'll be right back. There's a little bit more here I want to share with you. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
With guns, your progress is in megatons. Well, who's left when the war is won? A soldier of a misfortune, a soldier of an angry call, soldiers on foreign soil. Well, we're not here to fight your war.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. It's published in the Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada newspaper, and it was carried by TVNewsLies.org, and I'm sharing it with you. A presentation to the Energy Commission of that province, I believe, New Brunswick. And the author of this, Maxime Daigle, is a self-described former oil and gas driller. As long as a student in electrical engineering technology and alternate energy systems. And he's trying to warn the provincial government of New Brunswick not to allow the fracking process to occur in what apparently are large natural gas deposits off the coast of New Brunswick. And he's laying out his reasons why. He goes on, there's no doubt that we need oil and gas to keep our way of living, but it doesn't mean we have to continue our way of life, because sooner or later, there won't be a choice to make the right or wrong decision. Nature will make that decision for us. We maybe need to change from well-having to well-being. That's an interesting turn of phrase there. We live in a society that nature and life is not the most important. It's the economy. And we are paying a price for it today, and we'll pay an even bigger price if we keep going down the path we are now. How many governments have really taken the environmental issue seriously? Our attitudes are based on selfishness, our economic situations, and politics. This disconnection from nature has caused us to believe that we are above the environment, but all along, we are part of the environment. The biggest derivative in the equation needed to be focused upon to solve our energy dependency is the environment first and foremost. Independent experts are not driven and working on trying to make money off their statements. They are informing us of what is upon us and that it could be the greatest challenge of our time. We need to stop living in denial and create a sustainable future in time. The transition needs to be led by our governments that have the resources to put the right people together to make this happen. We have the technology that can capture the sun's energy in sub-technology of solar cells, wind and air, or geothermal heat transfer systems. I'm sure that if you would ask the public if they would want these resources, they would say yes. So instead of investing in non-renewable resources, please consider investing in renewable resources as possible incentives or large-scale renewable and innovation. Why are we not making the needed transition? Is the government answering to a higher power? Corporations, maybe? A very good-hearted man named Deepak Chopra once said, people are doing the best they can given their level of awareness. So the way to help others to reconsider changing their way of thinking and their hearts is by making people aware and working together toward a common good for everyone and the Earth's biosphere. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance are our five emotional stages toward this. Most live in denial all their lives or feel so hopeless or suppressed by authority that they choose to stay there. David Suzuki said that when we look back at what was the basis of us as social creatures, he concluded that it was love. So if we care enough for ourselves, for each other, our kids, our grandkids, we will make the changes needed. When the government wanted to sell New Brunswick Power Company, we stood up together and voiced our concern and said it was not acceptable. So again, we need to make a point to protect our home while being able to have access to electricity. So when you go home tonight and your loved ones look you in the eyes and tell you they love you, remember that love is just more than a word. It's the action of what we do or would do to protect their lives. Thank you. A statement by Maxime Daigle, a former oil and gas driller and a student in electrical engineering, technology, and alternate energy systems. It was a presentation he made to the Energy Commission in New Brunswick, Canada, not more than a week ago, about his concerns about shale gas exploration. And again, I apologize for the choppy recitation of that, but some of the wording in the translation from French to English and then to American English was a little difficult on my part to follow. But you get the point, and so do I. We'll be right back.
Everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, the ongoing attack by the vermin on the hard right in this country, the right wing in this country, continues. There's so many things to challenge Obama on, issues of substance, but they don't, the right wing vermin. Here's the latest. A Democratic state lawmaker in Ohio. Matter of fact, he was, he is asking, this Democratic state lawmaker is asking the Ohio House of Representatives speaker, or another Republican pig, to apologize for a joke suggesting Obama should be jailed. But the Republican, William Batchelder, says, I'm not going to take back what he viewed as a light-hearted quip. The Democrat says the remark is, quote, absolutely deplorable, end quote. Now, here's the setup. Republican right-wing drooler Batchelder was introducing Rick Santorum to a crowd of about 1,200 people at a Lincoln Day dinner Saturday. Batchelder said, in suggesting Obama shouldn't be reelected, quote, the liberals are asking us to give Obama more time, and I think 25 to life would be a good start. Representative Sykes, who is demanding an apology, called it disrespectful to Obama and the office of the presidency. The right-wing vermin, Batchelder, said yesterday he borrowed the joke from comedian Jay Leno, and he meant no disrespect. The White House, when asked about this, just gave the whole issue the middle finger. Now, here's something that the right wing can really go after Obama on. Which one of the right wing trolls who think they're going to be president next year, be elected president this year, which one of these booger eaters came up with the expression that Obama began his presidency apologizing to the rest of the world. Who was it? Was that Romney or Gingrich? Sounds like something this rotund turd Newt Gingrich would say. You know, every time I think about him now, I think about his holier-than-thou wife who plays, what does she play, the flute or the cello or the zither or something in some church organization. And, you know, she's such a devout Catholic, although she was willing to commit adultery in violation of one of the Ten Commandments for, what, 4 years with her porker? And, you know, I'm sorry to drift off into a tangential subject here, but that's the reason I hate these right-wingers most of all, their hypocrisy. I mean, there she is, Callista, with her sprayed-on hair and her frozen face. This girl has rigor mortis, and she's not even dead. Maybe she is dead. Maybe it's a prop. I swear she looks animatronic. But, you know, so she's boinging a married man for 4.5 years with her little holier-than-thou pinched-lip look now and her string of pearls. Don't you want to go up and just adjust her pearls a little bit? You know, a little off-center. You know, here, Callista, let me adjust those pearls for you just a little bit. No? Yeah, I committed adultery for 5 years, but it doesn't matter. I'm a Christian. Jesus loves me. So does my priest. Oh, get away from that. Get away. Go back out, back out, back out, back out. Beep, 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 beep. Okay. So here's something that the right wing can go after Obama. He sent an apology for the burning of the holy books of the Muslims at the largest American base in Kabul, outside Kabul in Afghanistan earlier this week. The protests. Now, how many people are dead now? The latest is that a man wearing an Afghan army uniform turned his weapon on NATO soldiers and killed two of them. This is how it always goes, right? You burn our books, we'll burn your people. Very simple. So Obama is doing what he can to apologize for this. Of course, religious fanatics, I don't care if they're Muslim, Christian, or Jewish, it doesn't make any difference, or Hindu. A fanatic is a fanatic. They will cut your head off. They will remove your hands. They will eviscerate you and let your insides fall to the desert floor. They will stomp on you. If it's in this country, they will blow up your buildings. I'm referring to the Murrah Federal Building. They will kill indiscriminately men, women, and children. They don't care because God is on their side. So the Muslims in Afghanistan now, and they have a point here, not as far as I'm concerned, not about their holy book. And it doesn't make any difference what I think. It's what they think, right? But about the fact that they have an invading and occupying force in their country. The force comes into their country, blows stuff up, kills people, tortures people, renditions people, sends people to Cuba, for Christ's sake. How many Afghans even know what a Cuba is? But that's where they wind up. And I'm not being culturally a snot. I'm serious. How many tribal Afghans living out in the mountains have ever even heard of Cuba? But this is what we did. We just come in there and bomb and strafe and kill for 10 years, a decade now. Huh? 10 years. And then to add insult to injury, we decide to we burn their what they consider to be their holy book, and oh yeah, we pee on their corpses. Nice, huh? And you wonder why they go berserk with their crazy religiosity. And again, it bothers me not a bit what religion it is. When it's fundamentalists of this stripe, people who subscribe to fundamental religion are nuts, by definition. But it doesn't make any difference. They will still kill, burn, decapitate. Look what the Saudis consider to be justice. look what American evangelical Christians would consider to be justice if they ever get control. Oh, Rick, be president. Then we can start the great purge in the United States. And we can go back to biblical law. Like they do in Saudi Arabia, like they do in Afghanistan, like they do in Pakistan, like they do in how many fundamentalist Islamic countries? You show me a fundamentalist Christian country and fundamentalist Islamic countries and let them touch, let them come in contact, and I will show you the end of civilization. But I digress. Obama said in a letter to President Hamid Karzai, quote, I wish to express my deep regret for the reported incident. I extend to you and the Afghan people my sincere apologies. Oh, yeah, that'll work. That'll work, Mr. Obama. That'll work real well. Always has in the past. Yep. All you have to do is apologize. And religious fanatics of any stripe will say, oh, well, you're sorry? Oh, okay. Thanks. Obama said, the error was inadvertent. I assure you that we will take the appropriate steps to avoid any recurrence, to include holding accountable those responsible. Now, this was the sending this letter was an apparent, and it's not going to work, attempt to tamp down the ferocity of the protests now. Third day of angry demonstrations across Afghanistan. Another 6 Afghans were killed, 55 wounded. 2 NATO soldiers were killed in eastern Afghanistan when a man wearing the uniform of the Afghan National Army turned his gun on the soldiers. The NATO commanding general in Afghanistan, I think he's a Brit, John Allen, already had offered his apology for the burning of the Qurans. He ordered an investigation and issued an order for every coalition soldier in Afghanistan to complete training in, quote, proper handling of religious materials, end quote. Why not just get your asses out? NATO, United States, Great Britain, whoever's still left, why not just leave? What are you doing there? What in the hell are you doing in Afghanistan? Why are we there?
War on Terror, Mike.
By this morning, according to the Times, demonstrations had begun to widen. In one demonstration in Lakhman province, 1,000 protesters turned violent. In Bakhlan province, there was a confrontation between the police and protesters. One protester was killed. And the fury does not appear likely to abate soon. Some members of parliament called on Afghans to take up arms against the American military. Oh, that's a good idea right there. So according to press reports, the fury evoked by this apparent inadvertent burning of used copies of the Quran, and how, you know, you got to wonder what kind of education, social education, our military and our coalition partners in this occupation, invasion and occupation, and continuing slaughter of Afghan civilians. What kind of education, social education, is given to these people before they're plucked out of a Western country, England, U.S., Canada, if Canada still contributes soldiers, and put down in what is essentially a 14th century tribal society that is very caught up in the fundamentalism of their particular religion, without giving these troops, who are all armed and extremely dangerous, without giving the troops any kind of necessary and required background as to the social milieu that into which they're being dropped, into which they're being placed.
When you walk out the gates of the fort, don't do this, don't do that. Because if you do, it's going to cause riots that will roil across the country. So as a result of the apparent lack of any kind of education as to the culture into which these people are being told to go and kill. Yeah, I know how this sounds. I know. As the result of this lack of education, we have once again an incident where the religiosity of these people is being stirred up to the point of where all religion goes eventually into murderous rage. All religion eventually winds up there. Look what the Orthodox, extremely conservative Jews feel they have license to do to the Palestinian people who have on their land their olive orchards and groves torn up so that these religious Jews can build their houses. They don't give a damn. So, religious fundamentalism, I don't care what religion it is. It can be a religion that worships amoeba. It doesn't make any difference. Eventually, they will kill you. Eventually, they will cut your throat, decapitate you, condemn you to everlasting torture and death and hell, and your immortal soul and everything about you, all your atoms, every single little muon that makes up the basic building blocks of your existence. That's how crazy they all are. So not telling American or NATO soldiers, hey, listen, if you come across their holy book, it's called the Quran, don't burn it. If you come across their corpses after you have shot them in the head because you're a sniper, don't walk over to the corpse and urinate on them. You know, it's not cool. Good God! This is, you know, I'm sitting here saying this stuff and I'm thinking, what? So anyway, according to some members of parliament in Afghanistan, the country to whom we are delivering freedom and democracy, yes, indeedy, so the children can fly kites and the women can wear white shoes and the men can cut their beards. Yes! Hip, hip, hooray! According to some members of parliament in Afghanistan, they are calling on their fellow countrymen to take up arms against the American military. And Western officials said they feared that conservative mullahs might incite more violence at the weekly Friday prayer when a large number of people worship at mosques. That'll be tomorrow. I thought Muhammad was a teacher of peace. I thought Jesus was. Moses, not so much. But good Lord. Abdul Kawasi, a member of parliament from a certain district of a certain province, said, quote, Americans are invaders and jihad against Americans is an obligation, end quote. This is like Franklin Graham saying, Barack Obama was born a Muslim because he cannot escape the fact that his father was a Muslim. His father wasn't Franklin, it was his grandfather. And as in the Jewish tradition, where the Jewishness of a person is transferred through the mother, the Islamic aspects of a person in that faith is transferred through the father. So Barack Obama, you know, this madness. This craziness. Anyway, so now it's jihad and more murder and mayhem. Of course, if Afghans had invaded the United States and overthrown our government and installed a former oil company lobbyist, which is what the Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, is. He used to work for UNICAL. If that happened here, wouldn't you join me in taking up arms and start to behead these people? Wouldn't you? I mean, I would be on the front lines with my 50 cal and looking for these sons of bitches who were using drone aircraft to kill my children and my neighbors and turning my village into rubble and bone fragments. Wouldn't you do the same? If you wouldn't, then you have no love for your fellow tribesmen here, you see. So, look for the right-wingers now to start shrieking and wetting their pants and getting all poo-poo crazy over the fact that Barack Obama has issued an apology to the government of Afghanistan about the fact that our people burned a bunch of their holy books. Isn't this fun? Isn't this so, I don't know, so 14th century? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm like, well, make sure that what you keep lit is okay. I'll see you tomorrow night. I'm Mike Malloy.